What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 47 of the Lukewarm Games Podcast, your weekly source for unique perspectives on all things video games and pop culture. As always, I'm your host, Luke Lewis, joined by the vacation adventurer of Animal Crossing, Claire Helmberger.
Woohoo! Vacation!
Epic fan reaction.
Nice.
How's it going?
I am doing good. I am officially done with the school year for a week. Until summer school.
Sorry, some applause were necessary, listeners. I hope you were clapping at home. Claire made it through an entire school year amidst...
Online teaching.
Yeah. Amidst pandemics, amidst vaccines, amidst...
All sorts of things.
Social justice events.
Yeah.
And change for good, and just crushed it. Very proud of her.
The ups and downs
very
of
awesome.
This year. Thank you.
You da bomb.
We all did it together.
Indeed.
And here we are.
Here we
coming
are.
Coming out the end for of it, another it seems.
Wonderful podcast.
Yes.
So just to timestamp this a little bit, this is pre-recorded. Claire and I are heading out on vacation to visit our families in Washington safely. Very excited. Like we mentioned in a Patreon podcast recently, flying on a plane. We're both vaccinated, though. Our families are vaccinated, so, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Should be as safe as possible, and looking forward to seeing our families. That being said, we decided we should take some time off from recording that week, which conveniently I didn't think about this when we planned our vacation, just because it's the 1 week you have between your summer school courses starting.
Right.
Is E3.
Yeah.
Conveniently, one of the largest video game events of the year. Rest assured, though, as soon as we're back from our vacation, we're going to do a ton of reaction podcasts to the streams. We're going to be watching all the announcements and press conferences mm-hmm. while we're on our vacation, because we're still fans and enjoy it. But we aren't going to be immediately recording our reactions just to enjoy time with our family.
Yeah.
But like I said, rest assured, I got some special guests lined up. We have some different things in the works. We will be doing a lot of post E3 coverage.
Yes.
So...
Very
excited about that.
Yep.
Tons of exciting announcements. And with that, let's get into We've Got the News, our weekly news discussion of what's happening within the games industry. Today we're going to break down the Horizon Forbidden West State of Play, which happened a couple weeks back that
mm-hmm.
we didn't get a chance to talk about because it happened right around when you had your concussion and you were trying to avoid screens as much
yeah.
as possible. And so you were able to watch it recently, though, so I want to get our thoughts on that. And then I also want to talk a little bit about the Summer Games Fest kickoff event that Jeff Keighley hosted earlier today as of recording this, and talk about some of the highlights of the games that we saw
yeah.
there, just to get into a little bit of that E3 hype. And I also would consider Horizon, their state of play, within that same realm of E3 stuff, with Sony not having a major... I mean, obviously, they're not having a presence at
yeah,
E3
right.
proper, but... This press conference for their state of play for Horizon kind of filled that void for me
yeah.
a little bit, so I want to include that in the discussion as well.
For
so
sure.
let's kick things off with Horizon. We saw a pretty lengthy gameplay demo,
mm-hmm.
about 14 minutes or so of gameplay. Saw new melee systems, saw kind of the overarching enemies in the game, new creatures and abilities in terms of the underwater combat and the different things going on in this new ecosystem set in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of this trailer?
I thought
slash gameplay
it looked,
demo.
I am so excited for this game. I thought it looked stunning.
It looks gorgeous.
Yeah.
Like, drop-dead gorgeous. And I didn't really fully understand that until I rewatched it with you, because
mm-hmm.
it looked beautiful when I watched it the first time, but it was on the Kinda Funny reaction stream,
right.
so it was a little bit compressed. But seeing it in full 4K, it's gorgeous.
It's
the lighting is
crazy.
Insane, and the colors just really pop.
So vivid.
Mm-hmm.
And the gameplay looks super fun. I liked getting a chance to see the weapons functioning and the melee and all the different, like the weapon wheel, the different options you have. I hope that you can still use the tripwire, especially the exploding one, because that
yeah,
was my jam.
That was a great...
I pretty much spammed that.
I feel like that's kind of such an iconic
yeah.
gadget from the first game that I can't imagine they wouldn't include a variation of that or like
right.
some kind of element of that.
Yeah.
I was most excited about the underwater sections
mm-hmm.
when they specifically detailed that there isn't going to be like oxygen tank type mechanic where right. you have a device that'll let you breathe underwater, and it was so stunning, and that led to different creatures and things that were underwater based, and that just looked really stunning. It reminded me of Subnautica, but it was really cool, the idea of having that extra layer of exploration.
Right.
I was also very excited at the new gameplay elements that they showcased. Specifically, I thought the melee combat actually looked really fun.
Yeah.
And looked very flashy, and I liked the finishers, and I liked the, like, dodging and parrying that I felt like was happening with that. So it looked more involved and definitely an evolution of the less than awesome melee combat of the first game. Loved the first game, but the melee combat definitely a weaker
part. It left something to be desired, for sure.
Additionally, the like paraglider hologram shield she pulls out, very Breath of the Wild reminiscent, but I'm so here for it. It looks really fun, and it works within the context of when you see Aloy landing on the larger creature at the end of the more like boss fight style section. Like, you can use that like strategically, and I can imagine like really creative ways in combat that you could like land on somebody or like
definitely
use that to your advantage.
The traversal in general looked really cool. I liked how it kind of showed you how you can use the what was it called? The focus.
The little like earpiece.
To kind of see where you can climb and jump and stuff, as opposed to having it just be like this bright yellow piece of wood with the flag on it, like kind of in the first game where it was like really obvious.
It felt organic, and it worked. The UI also, I felt like, was really well integrated based on what we saw.
It looked like they've really elaborated and expanded and kind of figured out what works and added.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. And I think going off of that, it looks like what you would want a sequel to be in games, where it's like a true refinement of what was great about the first game, but also recognizing some of the shortcomings and making those better, whether it's melee combat, whether it's adding more elements of traversal that are fun and exciting.
Hopefully outfits is one of those areas that we see.
That's true. Yeah. That first game had some kind of wild clothes that weren't
always super fun to wear.
It was fun to mix around, but once you found the one that you're like, okay, I kind of like this one, there was really not a ton of incentive to change.
Yeah.
I'll be interested to see how they play with kind of the, once we get more closer to launch, I assume we'll hear more about like the level progression and the more RPG elements of that. I'm super excited at the idea of playing with the bow and arrow mechanics with the haptic feedback of the DualSense. I think that's going to feel great. And just the way the game ran, it just looks incredible. I'll be very interested to see how it plays on PS4. Just because I personally won't play it on PS4, obviously, since we have R5, but
unless to like check it out, see.
Yeah, maybe like just to like see, because it just looks so great. But I mean, we had great games like The Last of Us Part 2 that are like running at such a crazy level, but I just think about like how loud our PS4 was when we were playing that game. That, like,
you said that with Final Fantasy 7 Remake,
right?
As well.
Yeah, especially those two, kind of more at the tail end in the last year of the PS4's like prominence. Yeah. I would say, obviously, there's still PS4 games coming out cross gen, but it's just one of those things where like this specific game, I was kind of surprised to hear it was cross gen versus but then they've come out and said that it sounds like God of War will also be cross gen, and obviously Miles Morales was cross gen. Ratchet and Clank, which as of recording this will launch tomorrow, isn't cross gen, which I found kind of interesting, because I feel like it's in that same camp of kind of larger scale first party, well known established franchises.
I almost wonder if that's because we've seen the gameplay of Ratchet and Clank, the traveling between dimensions, and how that is used.
It looks
like
they're playing with
mechanic.
A lot of tech.
I think that they're probably just like the fast ass load times of the PS5 can make that seamless, and it would just lag like hell on the PS4. That's what I'm imagining.
You would think that's an interesting point, too. And like we said, as of recording this, we haven't gotten a chance to play Ratchet and Clank, and we're about to head out on our vacation, so I probably won't get to it until we get back from our trip, but I'm really looking forward to it. Obviously, it was one of my most anticipated games of this year, so
I'm looking forward to checking out
just
for the first time.
Just based on the reviews that people, I don't know if you've seen any of the reviews that are coming out, but it's a 92 on Metacritic right now. Incredible reviews from IGN and Game Informer, and you know, a lot of specifically at IGN, Jonathan Dornbush, and at Game Informer, I believe Andrew Reiner was involved in that review, mm-hmm. which they're folks I've been following for many years, and I always really appreciate their taste, and when they say a game is like, this is a must-play, I have never felt betrayed by that, so right. when they say it's really good, I'm very excited, and everything I've seen of the game looks absolutely stunning, so... Yeah. Sorry, we were talking about Horizon, but then we ended up on Ratchet & Clank. But I think it's just that we're talking about how PlayStation's choosing to build out their portfolio right now in interesting ways. And they're still totally killing the game with these first-party exclusives. And can't wait to see what Horizon has to offer.
Yeah, me too. I need to finish the first game before this new one comes out.
I want to go back. That's my goal. For sure. I want to go back, and I never played the Frozen Wilds DLC. Right. So I'm hoping to jump back in. It's one of those that I never got the platinum, but I always wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it might be the time.
Yeah.
Maybe post Ratchet and Clank. I think I want to finish that first and then maybe jump back in.
Unless it's like a lot of collectible stuff. Like the Far Cry. I'm thinking of the Far Cry Primal one where you just had to hunt down all those little.
I enjoy that kind of stuff though. That's like, fair. I don't know. I personally, like, once I've completed the story, I love throwing on a podcast and, like, exploring mm-hmm. the world like more. If I enjoy that game, and especially, like, the mechanics of that game, which in Horizon I definitely do. I also feel like the map isn't terribly large. Like, it's pretty big, but, like, I don't feel like it's insurmountable to find all those collectibles. And
especially
now,
once you've uncovered the entire thing and you can fast travel.
Right, and you have those extra, you know, traversal options and things. Yeah, so I think it would be a fun experience, so I want to jump back in at some point. It'll just be a matter of when.
Right.
I'm interested on your thoughts. They didn't announce a release date specifically with this trailer, and they came out and said they're targeting holiday 2021. They're on track currently, but they don't want to put a date on it, and then they're not able to hit it, and they have to delay it.
Right.
Placing our lukewarm games bets right now, do you think this game hits in 2021, or do you think it's delayed until 2022?
I have a hunch that it'll come out early 2022. I feel like February. I don't know why. But I just have a hunch, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think I'm in the same camp. I am leaning towards March,
mm-hmm.
but it'll also be interesting to see in this next week what we hear from Nintendo, because the Switch Pro is all but confirmed at this point.
Right.
And the Switch originally launched in March of 2017, which it'll be interesting to see if the same thing happens as in 2017 as it does in 2022, because Horizon launched in February 2017, and Breath of the Wild launched in March of 2017. And immediately everybody kind of stopped talking about Breath of the Wild.
Or stopped talking about Horizon.
I totally mixed it up. Thank you. I reversed it. I meant stop talking about Horizon and started talking about Breath of the Wild, because it just felt, for me, it just felt moment-to-moment more fun.
Uh-huh.
The exploration, the go-anywhere, do-anything, try-anything. It just felt really cool and mm-hmm. exciting and new. And Horizon felt new and exciting, but in a different way. And it just kind of got overshadowed with the time, where it was like, Horizon was fantastic, but Breath of the Wild was, like, really game-changing
for me, personally. Sure. It was, like, a monumental.
Like I said, I loved Horizon. Not trying to belittle that one, but it was definitely like, played Horizon for the most part, almost finished it, but then jumped into Breath of the Wild and got totally sucked in and didn't come back to Horizon for several months.
Yeah, quite a while.
More like once we were getting to Game of the Year discussion, I was like, oh, I want to finish that because I was enjoying that. And then I remembered, like, oh, I really love this game. Like, this was great. Right. And I definitely considered it one of my favorite games of the year, but it got overshadowed. And my fear is that what if that happens again with Breath of the Wild 2 and the mm-hmm. Switch Pro, which at this point I have to imagine are coming out somewhat close together, because I think they're going to want a big title like that that's pushing the tech for the Switch Pro and to warrant people needing to get this new system.
Yeah. I wonder if it'll be a question of it happens again, or if they announce that and then Horizon either comes out on time in the holiday window, or is pushed back significantly because they've learned from that and don't want it to happen again. Do you know what I mean?
I definitely think in the case of Horizon, I would keep an eye on when Nintendo puts out their date.
Uh-huh.
And there possibly could be some strategy that they might be waiting to see what Nintendo has to say, and then maybe they'll put out a date later mm-hmm. this summer. I ultimately don't think that's the main reason they're waiting. I think they're just, they want to be confident about their date.
Right.
And they want to be able to stick to it. And from there, we'll see what happens. But I think at this point, they can coexist a little bit more uniformly. Like,
this will be the first open world Zelda game.
Right. And so, I just think, like, the people that have PS5s and Switches will get both. Mm-hmm. And the people that have one or the other will get the one that they have. You know what I mean? I don't think they're dividing the audiences as much as they initially were.
Uh-huh.
I think there's space in the market for both games. And I think both games, being established sequels, have a fan base that'll gravitate towards them no matter what, to an extent.
Right.
Sorry. I had to clear my palate a little
Sometimes
bit.
Sometimes you gotta, yeah. Clear the words.
Anyway. But shall we jump into some of the announcements from Summer Games Fest?
Yeah, let's do it.
So, this event kicked off, and I honestly didn't know it was going to be a two-hour thing when I sat down to watch it this morning while I was doing some other chores and errands around the house. But very cool announcements. The pacing was interesting to me because in the first hour, I wouldn't say there was a ton that knocked my socks off. Uh-huh. But they saved some of the best announcements for later in the press conference, culminating in what was a show-stopping moment for me with the reintroduction and gameplay trailer of Elden Ring from Software. And I'm kind of a, like, cautious From Software fan. I really do love their games. I play almost all of their games for an extended period of time until I get really sad and scared and I have to move on. But they're such masters of the craft when it comes to world building and combat and making difficulty satisfying to overcome.
Right.
So, like, I am always really interested in this game, their games, and especially this one with the tie of, like, George Railroad Martin, Game of Thrones fame, was, like, involved in the world building and things.
Yeah.
Like, He doesn't have great character development in terms of, like, building strong female characters in Game of Thrones. Well, that's not true. He has strong female characters, but you know what I mean. He's kind of a misogynist, and he's not the most forward-thinking
There's a lot of male gaze.
There's some. I guess I'm just trying to say problematic moments. I'm not saying his characters aren't well-realized. Yeah.
We have some strong female characters, but we really see in Game of Thrones a lot of denigration.
Yeah, that's more women. What I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
But anyway, I was really interested to see what he could bring to this world in terms of world building, and the game looks stunning. I'm really intrigued about the open world idea within this Soulsborne genre. Traversing on a horse looks really epic. There's, like, fire-breathing dragons. You're jumping midair, like, it just looks really epic and really cool. And having a release date for this game at the kickoff of Summer Games Fest, I just felt like really set the tone in what Jeff Keighley's gonna accomplish this summer and the kind of partnerships that he was able to pull off. And I just thought it was really impressive, and I was really excited to see that one in particular at the show.
Yeah, I thought it was really visually something. And I think, kind of like Demon's Souls, I'm excited to watch you play a little bit of this game, but probably won't play it myself.
Totally fair.
I just have a hard time with games that are challenging to be challenging, because I have a hard time with games that are a normal amount of challenging, getting frustrated.
It's one of those games that, like, I probably won't ever beat, but, like, I will play for a couple weeks on and off and
just enjoy it.
Enjoy it and be a part of that conversation.
Yeah.
And I just enjoy that aspect of it, and I'm cool with that. And I like strategizing with friends and, like, trying to beat the games and, like, talking about them. And I just think it's a really interesting, like, subgenre of games that I kind of like to know what's up, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I think for me, something that's challenging in general is starting a game knowing I probably won't finish it. And it's that's part of why I have a hard time starting really long games, too.
Yeah,
it's just
totally.
Like, the commitment to investing some time into something that I won't be able to see all the way through, I just, like, lose motivation a little bit.
I had that, too, for a long time, especially in college, when it was, like, I didn't have time to play much. And even now, I don't have a ton of time to play much. But I've come to the point where with my games where I'm just, I want to play things, and I want to enjoy certain games, and I want to be a part of that conversation that, even if I only play 20 hours of a 50-hour game, I still want to play those 20 hours to experience that game a little bit and be a part of that conversation. And experience, like, the zeitgeist rather than like not playing it because I know I don't have enough time to beat it. That's kind of where I'm at personally, but I like totally understand that struggle. And I do have that struggle with a lot of games.
Yeah.
Of like, you know, varying lengths of, I get really excited for a shorter indie title because like, I know I can beat that on a day off, or I know I can chip away at that over the course of a couple weeks or different things like that for sure.
Or then there's games like Subnautica where I know it's going to take me quite a bit of time to finish it, but I am here committed for all to of
that.
It.
Yeah. There are obviously those games too that change it up a little bit. What other trailers were you impressed by that we saw at the Summer Games Fest showcase? I'll throw one more out before.
Yeah, go for it.
I was really excited to see more Back for Blood. I am so excited for that game. I was really excited to get details about the open beta on console coming later this summer in August.
Yeah.
I just think it looks so fun. I have a bunch of friends that are also excited for this game, and they're ready to jump in co-op with me, and so I'm just, like, building my squad, and I'm ready to go, and I just love a good zombie game, and no one does it like Turtle Rock, and I'm excited that they just decided to say, fuck it, if Valve doesn't want to make Left 4 Dead 3, we're going to essentially make Left 4 Dead 3, and it looks awesome.
Yeah, it does. I'm looking forward to playing that with you, too. One that I wanted to shout out was the Death Stranding, the director's cut.
What a trailer.
It was so
What a hilarious trailer. I couldn't believe they did that, but then I also totally could because it's Kojima, but like the cardboard box thing and the way the trailer just totally had a Metal Gear vibe sneaking around that little base, and then he pulls the box, and then he puts the box back, and it was great. And we were talking about before the show how you never played Death Stranding, but you watched me play a lot of Death Stranding, and now you think this will be the one you jump in
to try it
for yourself.
I watched you play, I would say, the first, 5 hours? And then you kind of... You kind of fell off or, ended up doing a lot of side quests when I wasn't around, but didn't really see... I don't know how much more plot you saw than that, but I didn't see any more plot than that, and I really wanted to.
I jumped back onto it right around the pandemic, actually, for whatever reason. I played a lot of it right before the launch of the PS5, and then once the PS5 came out, I kind of fell off again. So it's a game I periodically go back to, and I find it very interesting.
Yeah, I really have always wanted to play it, and so I'm excited for this because I'm just going to play this new version.
Yeah, I also think, obviously, we don't have, confirmation of exactly what this version is, but you have to imagine on PS5 it'll incorporate haptic feedback and adaptive triggers, and I think
that would be
this
so
game
cool.
will be so interesting with those components, considering, the tension you're feeling in your body as Sam Porter Bridges, as you're walking and you're using the triggers to climb and balance yourself.
Right. I remember it already felt quite immersive on the PS4 without all of those added features.
It's just really interesting because I feel like on paper, this is such a let's show off what PS5 DualSense can do, similar to Returnal.
Right.
But it was actually a late generation PS4 title. So I think it'll play really well on PS5, and I'm excited to jump back in. And I think I want to try to finish it this time around, assuming our saves will transfer into this new version. I'll be interested to see specifically, what do you think the director's cut element means? Is it extended? Is there more content? Is there stuff that wasn't included? What do you think, in this case, that term means? Because after things like the Snyder Cut, directors reissuing cuts of their creations can always be kind of open-ended.
Right. I wonder if it's going to be, I wonder if there's just going to be a little bit more, because I feel like a lot of times with director's cut, what you see is the scene that was, 2.5 minutes long is 2 minutes and 45 seconds long, or 3 minutes long, where there's just
there's
a couple extra moments
or
dialogue or something. And I wonder if it's going to be the video game version of that, where some of the cutscenes have just a little bit more. Maybe there are some added side quests. Maybe the main plot of the game has an element that we didn't see because it was so crazy off the walls that they didn't include it in the final version of the game.
Right.
I think it could go in lots of ways, and I'm just kind of here to see what it is. Obviously, I won't be able to compare the two myself, but I'm excited to kind of hear what people who do play both versions have to say about it.
I have to imagine it'll probably be a little bit of that, but then it'll also probably be maybe there was an extended epilogue or another little episode, because I believe they're called episodes or chapters, the way the game is divided. Uh-huh. It feels very, like, episodic, so I could see, like, exploring another character or going uh-huh. back to another character and fleshing out a little bit more of their backstory in some regards. So I could see that, like, a little, like, another vignette, if you will, yeah. to the story. Because I think the game kind of, you could go to a new location, you know what I mean, and travel to a new part of the map or something, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'll just be curious to see how much new is in this version. Because yeah. at the end of the day, I think they could release, you know, an update similar to what Last of Us did with adaptive trigger feedback and 60 frame per second update and faster load times, and it would be good. But why, like, release a full brand new trailer and call it the director's cut if it's not something more significant?
Right.
Is kind of what I'm thinking.
That makes sense.
Do you have any other shout-outs from the show?
I think that covers...
Those are kind of your yeah. main ones. I think those are my biggest ones, too. Obviously, I thought Wonderlands from Gearbox looked pretty cool. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy the gameplay loop of Borderlands, and I think exploring, like, a new universe could be cool. And I think Ashley yeah. Burch as Tiny Tina is one of, like, the best characters in the Borderlands universe. So mm-hmm. I'm excited to see that what
yeah.
that means. And it was cool to see, like, Andy Samberg and Wanda Sykes and Will Arnett
yeah.
getting tossed really cool. around. So that could be a fun one.
True.
Yeah, it was kind of a cool lineup of games in a sense. There was something for everybody, mm-hmm. you know, so those Definitely. Were our big takeaways. But I think there were numerous other games that other people are going to gravitate to and want to talk about. So
yeah,
kudos to Jeff Keighley for putting together a true smorgasbord of
yeah
stuff.
For sure.
All right. Well, let's move on to our title track, main topic of the show okay. so far. Our topic... We're discussing Game of the Year so far. We're into June. We're kind of at the halfway point of the year. So I thought, mm-hmm. why not reminisce about some of our favorite games that we've played so far this year, and ultimately what we think our favorite game of 2021 has been so far.
Yeah.
So do you have a game you want to kick it off discussing?
I feel like we could go in, like, chronological order.
Start kind of early on. Yeah,
kind of start with Hitman for me.
For sure.
Which I didn't play any of myself with my, like, hand on the controller, but I watched you and, like, backseat gamed through a lot of levels with you, so it kind of felt like I was the one playing it. And I just really enjoyed watching you play it and
yeah,
doing that backseat gaming thing where we, like, strategized together and commented on how good it looked and... all that sort of stuff. What did you think about Hitman as the one who actually had the controller?
I've done a lot of reflecting on this because I was thinking about this, especially today, because I knew we were going to record this episode tonight. And I think Hitman's my favorite game of the year so far.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say it's the best game from a technical perspective or, like, it's the most perfect game. But I just had so much fun playing that game. And I just thought it was so clever and creative and... there's so many complex systems going on in the game that allow you to approach these assassination missions in countless ways, and the way your actions influence options that are then presented to you mid-level.
Mm-hmm.
It's just such a... everyone describes it as, like, the murder sandbox, but it truly is in yeah. a really fun way, and... I just really enjoyed digging deeper into all of the levels and finding... mm-hmm. interesting ways to assassinate the targets, checking out the community created content where they would come up with unique challenges that you could create or complete within each level.
Mm-hmm.
And the levels are so densely packed with, like I said, with ways to go about your objectives that it never gets old to replay them.
Right.
And you just constantly feel like you're finding new and interesting things to do. And
yeah,
I think the writing of each level is really cool, especially the Dartmoor level that is very reminiscent of Knives Out. Such a yeah. cool vibe. And
that one's really cool.
The different things you can do in that level. So for listeners that haven't played Hitman or you're new to the series, you play as an assassin and you are tasked with killing a specific target on the map, or sometimes multiple targets. But it is, as much as it takes itself seriously, it's also one of the funniest games I've mm-hmm. ever played, because you can go about a mission very sneakily, white-collar crime, assassinate with a sniper rifle from a perched view, you disguise yourself as a police officer and you exit the building. Mm-hmm. You could do that. Or you could dress up as the chef and poison the person's dinner. Or in the case of Dartmoor, one of the things I did was there was a family reunion happening, essentially, because one of their family members had died. And mm-hmm. so they were all there to mourn the loss of their family member. And I posed as the family photographer that had been hired to photograph the event.
Mm-hmm.
And so I put the electrical cord for the camera into this fountain next to where the family would be taking their photo, and then called the family down to take their photo. And then when I snapped the picture, it electrocuted my target because they were standing on the electrical cord that was draped into the fountain.
Yeah.
And just like random, clever, wacky shit like mm-hmm. that happens all the time. And like I said, I just kept going back to it.
Yeah.
And I haven't gone back to it recently, but I played so much of it early on in the year, and my experiences have just stuck with me. And I've played a ton of other great games this year, but that's the one that I just remember super fondly. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, oh yeah, I should go back to that. And I mean, like, with everything I have to play right now, and I'm so busy, like, it hasn't happened, but I want to. And I think that says something about my feelings about the experience.
For sure. So I brought that one. Do you have one you want to bring? Do you want to bring the next one?
Sure. I think one that I played more recently that came out earlier in the year is an indie from PlayStation, Maquette.
Mm-hmm.
It was a PlayStation Plus game in February that I recently just got around to playing. And I was just really blown away by the game. It reminded me a lot of games from Annapurna.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it is an Annapurna game, as I say that. But it has a great style to it. If I was going to describe it, it's a love story,
mm-hmm.
Kind of a melancholy love story, but it's told in perspective of this puzzle game. So it reminds me a lot of kind of a storybook unfolding in front of you as you're solving these puzzles, and the world is incredibly gorgeous and fully realized, and the game plays a lot with perspective in interesting ways. So you, the character in first person, are looking at a small diorama of the world around you.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you interact with that diorama, that influences the larger world. So you're manipulating objects between the two dimensions to solve puzzles.
Right.
And it's just really clever and really intuitive, and in concept, it's a pretty basic, like, gameplay loop of you put the small item in the smaller world, and then it becomes bigger in the outside world, and then you can then use that item to solve puzzles. And so there's a lot of, like, oh, I need to find this item to unlock this door to advance to the next area, where then I will get the next little bit of this storybook romance story as you're unfolding. But the visuals are, like I said, are incredibly beautiful. There's amazing lighting. It has this really great soundtrack of indie music that just sets the vibe of each scene so well. And I just found it really heartwarming, and it just tugged at my heartstrings in a nice way. And it's incredibly short. It's only like 4 or 5 hours long. Longer if you want to be really completionist about some of the collectibles and whatnot. But just a really beautiful game that I honestly haven't heard a lot of people talking about, but it's definitely one of my favorite experiences of the year.
Yeah. Very nice.
What's another one for you that you've enjoyed?
The next one I want to bring to the table is It Takes Two.
It Takes Two,
baby. Which we have only played together and we haven't finished it, but
I want to so bad.
Me too.
We're really far. I think we're close.
Yeah, we're really close. It's got this really moving story that really tugs at those heartstrings, but it's also just visually gorgeous. And like, as someone who's always loved like miniature things and thinking about what it would be like to be small and like the borrowers and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I've loved exploring this world as these tiny, tiny people. And it's so right. Fun. It's so fun. And
it's just whimsical.
But there's this level that feels like about the middle point of the game, but we don't know for sure because we haven't finished it yet. And I don't want to spoil what happens for any listeners who haven't played the game. But there's a lot with like bioluminescence, and it gets almost a little bit more supernatural than the story itself is to begin with. And it's just, like, really, really pretty. And there's a lot with, like, lighting and water. Yeah, the game
is stunning, and I think just a masterclass in co-op design. Mm-hmm. I just think it's so well executed, and if you want to hear even more of our detailed thoughts, we did a full review episode of the game back in February when it originally came out. We also covered Hitman, for that matter, in January on the podcast, but I think it's interesting to have these discussions now, too, without retreading the points from those discussions, but just where is the game sitting with us
after this time has passed.
Because it's easy to be like, man, I loved that game. That was my favorite game of the year. But do you feel that way 3 months later? You know what I mean? And in the case of Hitman, several months later, you know what I mean? Going on 6 months later, I do. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to see what stuck with us.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so I think those two for sure stuck with me. What, do you have another one that stuck with you?
Yeah, obviously more recently, Returnal on PS5 from Housemarque. I love it, I love it, I love it. I'm nowhere close to beating it. I put like 25 hours in. I'm just really bad at the game, I'm going to be honest, but I love it. I think the gameplay is so fun. I think the world is so enticing to explore. And
yeah,
there's a great carrot at the end of the stick of finding those weapon upgrades and finding different buffs that affect your playstyle. And the, oh, let's just go one more run is the most addicting thing in any roguelike. And I think the way they integrate narrative in the game through the different audio logs and different data entries and things that you find throughout the game is just really incredible. And building off my roguelike love that was established with games like Dead Cells, and then even further in the narrative direction with Hades, really loved my time with Returnal, and I intend to definitely play more throughout the year, but it's one I would recommend very highly.
Awesome. Another one I wanted to bring that I think we've mentioned on the podcast before, but it is one of those that has stuck with me. And we made a point, it's Pokemon Snap.
We talked about that on the same episode with Returnal.
Yeah.
Last month, I believe. That was. Yeah. That was another recent one, too. Yeah, no, I hear you.
That's one where I feel like we made a point to play it together, kind of like It Takes Two almost, where we just, I want to play it with you and you play it with me, and we've only done a little bit separately from each other, and I just love doing it together. So we haven't gotten a whole lot further than we were the last time we talked about it. But I fully intend to play through every possible second of this game. And I would definitely say what I've played so far, it's definitely in the conversation for Game of the Year. So I wanted to give it a shout out too, because it's just fun and really beautiful.
It's one of the most relaxing game experiences I would say I've had recently, which says a lot. And yeah, it just, it hits all the nostalgia of
playing
a Pokemon game and falling in love with the cartoon and... Yeah, I've loved Pokemon Snap as well. I don't think it would be, like, my game of the year. I definitely could see it ending up in my top 10, top 15 for the year, but...
Or when we break it down into categories like best family game and stuff, that would definitely...
Best wholesome most wholesome experience, most whimsical, you know what I mean? I definitely could see that. Cutest, just vibes.
Heartwarming. Yeah, it's very heartwarming.
It's the most times I've said, aww...
I know.
In a game.
Oh my god,
this year.
So cute.
Yeah. Look at Croaky.
Although I think for me, the most times I've gone like, oh, would probably be my actual, what I think is my game of the year so far, which I will save for later. But yeah, I just really enjoyed pretty much every aspect of Pokemon Snap, and it's definitely one that I have, like, I crave going back to it when you're not around for us to play together. But then when I think about sitting down and playing it by myself, I'm just like, no, I want to share that moment with Luke. So that's kind of been a bit of a, you know, our schedules don't overlap super often,
for sure.
And when we are getting to the point in the summer where they kind of do a little bit more, I really want to get back to this together. And just
me,
like,
too,
every
I feel
evening,
like we have
level.
A couple,
why not,
like, between Pokemon Snap and It Takes Two, and then also Super Mario 3D World, which we haven't talked about on this podcast, but I really enjoyed. I don't know if it's Game of the Year discussion for me.
Mm-hmm.
Super fun, though. And
it is fun.
Definitely one of my favorite co-op experiences, and it's been really fun to jump into a 3D Mario game together.
Yeah, I've loved that one, too. Sorry, Sally, you were going to say something else. I was just going to
segue into kind of the next question I had as a part of this discussion, which was, what game that you played this year has surprised you the most? Like, what's something that you either went into it just not sure what you were going to think of it, or maybe didn't think it was going to be great, but ended up being something really special? For me, I think it has to be It Takes Two was my biggest surprise, because I expected to like it because I enjoyed A Way Out with you so much. But it just seemed like such a tonally different game and more kind of storybook art style focused, and this like romantic comedy. Like, how do you make a romantic comedy game?
Right.
But I was just really pleasantly surprised by the quality of the writing and the amount of times I'm smiling or chuckling along with the writing, and also enjoying the really well done gameplay and moment to moment like events and action that you're experiencing together. I think it is really fun.
Definitely. I think the game that surprised me the most is Pokemon Snap, because when I heard about the way the game is played, the rail shooter, that's what it's called, right? Where you're just like on the path and you can only control where you look, but you can't control where you go. I think in this case
it would be on rails. Like, yeah. There are on rails shooters, but just the term on rails means like you're being moved along through the level.
I thought shooters still worked because you're shooting, but just I guess shooting you're shooting with a camera.
Photos. Yeah, no, that's true. I guess I just think more of like House of the Dead Overkill, or like more like arcadey, like pew pew. Yes, pew pew.
Shoot pew pew, not shoot.
Yes,
you get it.
Everybody gets.
Totally lost my train of thought.
Listeners, well, you're our only listeners because this is an audio podcast.
Yes.
But Claire made a little, like, camera clicking the lens motion. I just wanted that to be communicated.
That was the ch-ch.
Yes, obviously.
Yeah, that's what accompanied that. Anyway, I wasn't sure how much I was going to jive with that mechanic, because I do traditionally, like, the more open, the better in video games for me. But in this case, the just sheer charm of the world that you're exploring, and the like fact that it makes it more challenging, it doesn't like limit it in any way, but it just, it kind of focuses it more.
Well, and that's what makes you want to go back and play the levels again, because if you could just walk around at your own pace, like,
you do it once and then you'd kind of be done.
Kinda, because there wouldn't be that challenge to like time it all out.
And, like, I was looking over here last time, so now I gotta look over here in case there was something going on over there. For sure. Actually wasn't anything going on over there, so now I have to look over here because I wasted those 30 seconds looking at a blank wall. So, yeah, I think it's just, I find that immensely appealing in a way that I totally did not expect before the game came out. So that's definitely the biggest surprise. And I would say that my favorite game of the year so far, which I didn't say yet, and I wasn't sure if we were saving that or if I should say what it is.
No, go for it.
My favorite game of the year so far is Subnautica Below Zero. But I don't think it surprised me, because I have been eagerly anticipating that for so long. And then as soon as I saw the like trailer during the State of Play for Ratchet and Clank, I think it was.
Yeah.
I was losing my fucking mind. I know. Oh my god, that is so much more than I expected it to be. That is so far beyond.
You were more excited for that than you were for Ratchet and Clank.
I was more excited for that than I've been for a video game. Maybe full ever. Stop. I was like losing my fucking mind, and then I started playing it, and the level of hype is just maintained. I fucking love that game. And Subnautica, the first Subnautica, is in my top five favorite games of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like this one expands on it.
Definitely.
So for sure, it's my game of the year so far. Probably gonna be my game of the year. Probably gonna be in my top five favorite games of all time.
Respect.
Probably in my top five favorite franchises of all time. I love Subnautica.
You stand Subnautica. I stand Subnautica. And I appreciate it. Listeners, if you want to hear more specific gameplay impressions from Claire, jump back to the last episode, episode 46, where we go in depth for quite a bit.
Or I could talk about it for another hour, thoughts.
I'm not saying... I enjoy hearing you talk about the game. I love talking to you about things you're passionate about. That's, you know, one of the great things about you. But I just wanted to point listeners to that specific discussion. Sure. I want to hear more from, like, an update from you on the game once you've beaten the game. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? To hear about, like, the whole experience as compared to the first one and things like that.
Overall experience, for sure. So I will keep you all posted on that.
For sure. So next I wanted to jump into talking about what games that have come out this year already that we still want to play, just to give, like, this is kind of a disclaimer of, like, we still want to play this, so if we didn't talk about it, it doesn't mean we're not interested, it just kind of means we haven't gotten to it yet.
Right.
The first glaring omission on my list would be Resident Evil Village, which I'm incredibly excited to check out. I just recently started playing Resident Evil 7 for the first time, mm-hmm. so I'm working my way through that, and then I plan to jump into Village probably later this summer.
Yeah.
So just throwing that out there, definitely a game I'm interested in. Do you have some other ones that you wanted to throw out?
Yeah, you already talked about Maquette, mm-hmm. and when I first saw what this game was all about before it came out, I thought that it just looked like something I would really get into and think was really cool.
Totally.
I love puzzle games like that, and this one just was very intriguing. But I just haven't had the chance to check it out yet. And I didn't watch you play any of it on purpose because I wanted to save that experience for myself.
I think it's one of those games that's best experienced firsthand, you know what I mean?
Right. So I'm going to play that still this year, and maybe it'll be in the conversation. And it just wasn't for me today because I haven't played it yet. So we'll see.
Definitely.
But that's on my list for sure.
I think Resident Evil is the biggest omission for me at this point. I still need to finish Returnal to be a part of that discussion. I'm also still working my way through Yakuza Like a Dragon, which came out on last gen last year, but it came to Series X last year, but came to PS5 this year. So I kind of consider that like a hybrid between the 2 years.
Yeah.
But I'm still working my way through that and really enjoying it as well.
Ooh, you should finish Bugsnax.
Yes.
We can talk about Bugsnax.
That was last year, but I do need to get back to it. You're just throwing all my backlog on display right now.
Sorry. I was just thinking
it's all good. It's one of those things where I feel like if you're passionate about video games in the current day and age, there's always so much
to play. There's always a backlog,
It's always hard to play everything to completion.
It's not 1980. I'm just kidding. I don't know why I said that.
Well, it's more like I remember, like, growing up, I think, of, like, the year, for example, 2010, when Red Dead Redemption came out in May, and then there was pretty much nothing really major released that summer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was a drought, and that was common. Like, summer was not the time to release games, whereas now I feel like there isn't really a drought period except for maybe, like, the last couple weeks of December,
mm-hmm.
and then maybe, like, the first week of the new year. But then other than that, there's usually something, you know, whether it's an indie title, whether it's a big AAA release, there's always something on the horizon. And then, no pun intended. But now it's just, like, there's always a new game.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm always constantly behind, which is a good problem to have, but it can be overwhelming at points.
For sure. The nice thing is that these games are all so stunning in their own ways that whenever you come back to them, they're still going to be awesome.
Totally.
So, there's that.
And it's one of those things where, like, a lot of them I feel like are very gameplay-oriented. Like, for example, with Resident Evil 8, even if I had a story moment spoiled for me, I feel like experiencing the puzzles and experiencing the tension and the sound and, you know, for myself is more important mm-hmm. than, like, the beat-to-beat, like, does the main character survive this encounter, or does he escape, or, you know what I mean, that kind of thing. It's like, that's not what the game is about. It's about experiencing
the journey. Definitely.
And that sort of thing. Well, cool. I think that was a good discussion and highlighted a lot of our favorite games of the year so far. And building off of that, what games are you most excited about for the remainder of the year?
Yeah, I think we've talked about this. We've had this question come up a couple times on the podcast.
Well, we keep getting updates of, like, what's delayed, what's actually coming out. You know what I mean? Like, as it stands right now, what's confirmed to be this year? What are you most hyped for in the coming months?
Like we talked about earlier, if Horizon does meet their goal of
For the
holiday,
sake of this discussion, let's exclude Horizon.
Okay.
We know God of War is delayed.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Let's just pretend.
Isn't Deathloop still coming out this year?
Deathloop was delayed to
September
or let me double check. Talk about Deathloop for a second.
If Deathloop was delayed to September, which is what I thought had happened,
I think it was delayed again, but I could be wrong.
I thought it had been delayed till September, but it might have been delayed another time after that.
Nope, still slated for September.
All right, okay. Right on. I'm really excited for that game. I, like we've talked about before, I've seen enough trailers to be totally on board, and the next part of the game I want to see is when I'm playing the game, so.
Definitely.
I'm looking forward to that one, for sure. And then, well, actually, I'll let you say the next one, because I think I'm going to be able to say, I don't want to take it from you.
Well, obviously, my most anticipated right now is Ratchet and Clank, right. Which is, like, upon us right now, but as a bonus answer, I'm most intrigued by Kena: Bridge of Spirits.
Oh, right.
Coming for PS5 in August.
So excited for that
game. It just looks adorable. Yeah. The gameplay looks really cool. I like the vibe that it's getting between, like, action platformer and, like, exploration and kind of Pikmin-esque solving puzzles with these creatures.
Absolutely.
It just looks really cool, and I like adding a new first-party franchise to... Well, I guess it's not a first-party, technically. It's a second-party. Ember Labs. But... great studio, and I'm really excited to see what they do with that title. And there's also just a ton of great indies coming out down the line, especially... I keep talking about this game every time we talk about most anticipated games, but it will never not be in that conversation for me. 12 minutes on Xbox.
Yes.
I'm praying. I'm not a very religious person, but I am praying we get a release date at Xbox's showcase on Sunday.
Yeah.
And I'm hopeful. I think it's this year. I feel like it's this year. Let's make it happen.
Let's do it.
It looks so good.
Everybody,
I can't
send
wait
your
to
good
play
vibes.
It. Yeah, yeah.
Send your good vibes to Xbox. Send your good vibes to Luke. Let's make it happen.
And if it happens, everyone tweet at me and tweet at Phil Spencer and say Luke called it. Luke's great. Phil, you should collaborate with Luke. He's welcome on the show anytime. You know.
Anytime. Yeah. Right on. I'm excited
cool.
for that one too.
Yeah, me too. So shall we get into our question with Claire for this week?
Yeah, let's do it. So
kind of a silly one. I'll admit I came up with this one if it wasn't obvious based on the question, but fire it
off,
Claire.
It's a fun one. It's a fun one. So if you had to create a video game based on a food, what would the game be about? Do you have one in mind?
I have one ready to go.
Okay, go for it.
Which is why I wrote this question, because I came up with this before I wrote the question. I was like,
okay.
How could we discuss this? Because this is there's a lot to unpack with this concept. So imagine we take the Overcooked franchise,
okay.
a beloved franchise of ours. We have King Onion. We have Kevin the dog.
Yes, of course.
We have this established universe of food chefs and alligators who cook meals and just a fun time. Let's take that formula and make a Super Mario 3D World-esque style platformer, where you are a chef and you are platforming and you have to fight anthropomorphic food a la Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. You have food attacking you. You maybe have friendly food that you can ride as vehicles.
Interesting.
I'm imagining like you're crossing a river and you're platforming on, say, cucumbers. You're fighting evil spaghetti and meatball monsters.
Interesting.
You are... let's say, using licorice whips to swing on vine. You know
all
what I
mean? All Lego Indiana Jones?
Yeah, like, I just feel like it would be a fun thing to explore, and specifically the Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs universe made me, like, yeah, this is a world that
It'd
they could
cool
flesh out
game.
And it would be fun.
Yeah.
And I liked the idea of using the Overcooked license just because I think that is a popular IP for folks, and there are a lot of fun playable characters that you unlock in that game, and just like the vibe and the art style of that game I think would fit really well with what I was envisioning.
Yeah, for
so
sure.
So that's my pitch.
Right on. So I think I interpreted this question a little bit differently because I thought it was asking your game has to be based on a singular food.
Well, that's
not
the thing.
Food
I think
in
you
general.
Could take it wherever you know what I mean?
Yeah. So my answer is that singular food.
Sure.
So I was imagining a VR cake decorating game.
Ooh, I like it.
Where you have challenges to decorate your virtual reality cakes in certain ways, and it gets more and more advanced, and you can do like shaped cakes and fondant and other techniques. I mean, like roll it out or use the pipe. And like maybe on next gen VR you could it will be sensitive to how firm your grip is on the controller for things like piping. I just, as someone who loves to decorate cakes but doesn't have the opportunity to practice much because I don't want to eat a bunch of cake, I would really get a kick out of a game like that. Where it would actually really feel like you were actually doing it, but then you wouldn't have to eat the cake at the end. I know there are a lot of people out there who are probably the opposite. It's like, all that work and no cake?
Yeah.
But for me, I'm like, I would love to do that. I would love to, you know, make buttercream roses and then not have to waste all that food.
For sure.
For not eating it. So.
I like it.
Yeah, that would be mine.
For context of this question, I just have had food on the brain because I work in a restaurant.
Yeah.
And it's just been on my mind. And hey, I also am a fan of friend of the show, J.E.'s podcast, We Are Not Game Devs, where he and his co-host Alex each week with guests, oftentimes they pitch a game that mm-hmm. they want to see made, and they like plan it out and they design the game in kind of a design doc-esque way, and it's really entertaining and it's a lot of fun, where they take a topic and they make a game within the span of their episode, and they make gameplay systems and they do that. So this was kind of like my quick condensed version of what they do on their show, but kind of in our unique realm of food discussion and things.
Yeah, so. For sure. It's a cool question, and definitely don't feel bad about having food on the brain, because you work in a restaurant. I don't have any excuse. I think about food constantly.
Food's good, man.
Food is good. It's one of the 8 wonders of the world, or I don't know.
And on that, listeners, go explore those wonders of the world. Find the foods.
Find the foods.
Tell us about them.
Yeah.
What foods do you enjoy? What games do you enjoy?
Send pics.
Send pics. Tweet us at Lukewarm Games. On that note, Claire, thank you so much for joining this week, as always.
It was so fun. It always is so fun.
Listeners, thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. Some quick housekeeping. You can subscribe to our podcast on your podcast platform of choice. We are officially on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and more. If you enjoy the podcast, consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/lukewarmgames for exclusive podcasts and more. You can follow at lukewarmgames on Twitter to get the latest updates on our show. And with that, have a fantastic week. Cheers and happy gaming.